When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In the dark of the night, comes a shimmering light to guide you. All along the twisted roads in your mind, darkness grows. And the whispering trees blow a dark haunting breeze right through you. Telling tales young and old, I hope that you enjoy the show.
Take two. Speaking of ghosts, shut us down.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to Monster Legend Podcast. I'm your host, Tanner, and today we have a special guest. I am happy to introduce Sarah Harris, author of the paranormal thriller House of Madness. How are you doing
awesome.
Today, Sarah?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me today, Tanner.
I'm very glad you came on the show today.
Thank you. Me too.
So how are you today? So what's up today? What are you doing?
Well, it's a good day. Hot come to summertime. And it is wonderful weather.
It's very hot. I think here in Tennessee, like.
Yes.
I think here in Tennessee last week, it was like so muggy out. Hot. Like a sauna.
Yeah. I completely understand. The same down here in Southeast Texas. We are right outside of, but it has made for a good summer of going to Galveston Island, which is one of the most haunted.
Tell me about Galveston Island. What happened there? What's haunted?
Awesome. Well, I go down there to sign my book, one of my books. It was my very first paranormal thriller, House of Madness. I do book signings down there at the Haunted Mayfield Manor, which is a ghosts and pirates attraction. At least it is now. Back in the days of the great storm of 1900 that decimated the island, it was the morgue. Yes.
Was that an actual morgue or was it a nickname for the place?
No, it was an actual morgue. I want to say 12,000 people were killed when the great storm of 1900s wiped out most of Galveston Island. This was in the time before hurricanes had names, but it was so massive it stretched all the way up into Canada.
Wow.
It just hit the coast and kept going. And they had to find temporary holding facilities for all of the bodies as they would wash up from the ocean. And it was the Butterow Building where they would stack bodies upon bodies and try to figure out what to do with them as they
Intense.
Yeah, it really is. Galveston has a unique culture on the island that's all its own. And ghosts and hauntings are a big part of that. From restaurant to the haunted attraction where I, you know, am blessed enough to sign my novel, even to Walmart in the toy aisle.
What sightings have there been in at the island?
Okay, lots of sightings. Some by myself and my family, you know, personally. Oh. And Walmart is interesting no matter where you are. Yeah. For many reasons. But this particular Walmart is built on the site of Old St. Mary's Orphanage. All but three people were killed in the storm of 1900. They were flung way far out to sea and they were the only survivors. So we've had things fly off the toy aisle behind us as we walk down. I have six children myself and you know, I'll have them in front of me and then things falling off and flying off the shelf behind us is quite interesting to say the least.
It'd be very startling.
Yes, very much so. I think one of my favorite encounters down on the island was in the Tremont Hotel. It's a very old hotel. It was around during the Civil War. It's of a cowboy who will hang out in the saloon portion of the hotel. However, I didn't see that particular sighting. Mine was much more strange. It happened in our hotel room. We checked in late, probably 6 or 7 at night. My husband and myself and the kids. And then we left, we unpacked, we trashed the room, we made sure we had all of our contacts and toothbrushes and the whole nine yards and just left everything a mess and went out to enjoy the sunset over the ocean. We came back about 1 o'clock in the morning from digging in the sand and walking in the surf and eating at Joe's Crab Shack to a completely spotless room. Things were packed up and set on the bed. Everything was put back away from whence it had come. Keeping did a wonderful job, but why are they cleaning up after us, you know, this late? Well, it wasn't housekeeping. It was a ghostly visitor, which I found very neat. They got to log it in their ghostly encounters book. I told them that I would like to take that ghost home with me because if it's going to clean up after me and all of the kids, then it can come.
Yeah. So tell me about this book, House of Madness.
What's awesome. Yes. Mm-hmm. Moved to Big Spring, Texas. Big Spring does have a state hospital, also known as an insane asylum, that is no longer functioning. It was put out of business and they rebuilt another one and modernized it and what have you. The house that we were lucky enough to happen into was near the old insane windows, the whole nine yards. If you can think of a creepy insane asylum, this is what this place looked like. And our house was built, customized by a doctor who worked at the insane asylum, which I thought gave it a neat history until we started making all of the findings. You know, the in real life, this is what inspired the book. Steel reinforced windows with grommets in the windows that were bigger than the ones I've seen on airplanes. Secret rooms, safe rooms, built-in safes into the wall that nobody could access. Secret phone lines that ran out of the house and underground, and nobody could figure out why they were there or how to get those in use. Well, as we lived in this creepy old house next to this creepy old, you know, abandoned insane asylum, this book pretty much wrote itself. My ex-husband was in the military, and he brought his own ghosts of war home at that time, which fill the pages of this book as well. But my daughter is the one who takes center stage. She has had ghostly encounters since she was tiny. We were stationed in Italy for a short time, and I found her in the closet talking in French at the age of 3. We don't speak French. We're from West Texas. You know, we speak fluently. And I asked her who she was talking to, and she informed me in England who lives in the closet. And I said, okay, I will leave you two to chat. And that was the premise of House of Madness. A family moves in to a house with memories of its own, with everyone carrying their own baggage with them.
That's sounds very, very intense and creepy. What was the most, like...
Yeah, I slept with the lights on.
What was the most memorable part of living in that house?
The most memorable part was the secret doorway to get outside. And it was very strange. And the secret door, if you were standing beside it, it was always cold. Even though before we even moved in and there was no air conditioning turned on yet, you still had a cold chill that would blow past this door. And it opened into a bunch of shrubbery. So there really was no way to get out. I mean, it was overgrown. And there was a smell by the door. I guess you could kind of describe it as Old Spice. It had an Old Spice feel to it, but it wasn't like anything that I'd ever smelled before. You know, maybe my grandpa's grandpa would have worn something like this.
Maybe he was a clone of somebody who lived there before.
That's my thought.
So interesting. So you're a big historian buff too?
Yes.
I love history. What got you into history?
Oh, I've loved history since I was a little bitty girl. Probably Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove is what did it for me.
I never read that.
Watched part of it. Oh, I highly suggest it.
I need to read it. Speaking of books. What's it about, real quick? Like a quick summary.
Yeah, certainly. It's a Tech Tana by two retired techs hired, but the world isn't ready to be done with them quite yet.
So on the show, we talk about, are you familiar with cryptozoology and cryptids?
Yes.
Yes. So on the show, we in the first season, we're going to every state, mm-hmm. and this episode will be in Ohio. Here's a, found some cryptids from Ohio.
Really?
Here's a, something I found from a book called The Weiser Field Guide to Cryptozoology, Werewolves, Dragons, Catfish by Ian Westwood. A businessman traveling through the little town of Loveland, Ohio at 3:30 a.m. one morning in May 1955 witnessed three humanoid reptilian creatures by the road. Pulled over and watched for a few minutes until one of the beasts started waving something that looked like a horse's eye sparkler around in the air. The businessman decided at this point that it was a high time to continue his road trip. He did provide a description, approximately 3.5 feet tall with leathery skin and webbed hands and feet. Their hands were distinctly frog-like, with deep grooves instead of hair. Their eyes were bulging and their mouths were wide. 5 months later, in August, a woman swimming in the Ohio River near Evansville, Indiana, was attacked by something below the water. It grabbed her and tried to pull her under. She got away, but was covered with long scratches and bruises. There's also an extraordinary greenish handprint on her leg. 17 years later, very early on the morning of March 3rd, 1972, a policeman traveling down an icy road saw a creature dash in front of his vehicle, nearly causing him to crash. After the policeman stopped his vehicle, he saw a frogman in his headlights, going down on two legs, looking at him. After a quick moment, the frogman jumped over the guardrail and down to the Ohio River. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, goodness. Well, my dad is actually from Indiana. And yeah, so when you're saying, you're telling me these incidences and occurrences, they sound very similar to things that he reported on as a boy. While not Frogman, other strange encounters. So I don't see why we wouldn't be able to go out and locate this cryptid, because it sounds like a wonderful adventure in the making. Yes.
More on the Frogman. In March of 1972, on two separate occasions, two Ohio policemen saw what became known as the Loveland Frogman. Fortune investigators Ron Schaffner and Richard McNee, who interviewed the officers, investigated the incident. The first incident took place at 1 a.m. on March 3rd, 1972, on a clear, cold night. Officer Ray Schrockney was en route to Loveland via Riverside Road when he thought he saw a dog beside the roadway. It failed on Twadwee Road, but then the thing stood up, its eyes illuminated by the car lights. Looked at him for an instant, turned, and leapt over a guardrail. Shortly saw it down an embankment into the Little Miami River. Grabbed the thing as weighing about 60 pounds, standing about 3 to 4 feet tall, and having a textured, leathery skin and a face like a frog or a lizard. Shortly drove to the police station and drove and returned with Officer Mark Matthews to look for evidence of the creature. It turned up scrape markings leading down to the side of a small hill near the river. On St. Patrick's Day, March 17, 1972, Officer Matthews was driving outside of Loveland when he had a similar experience seeing an animal lying in the middle of the road. He sought to remove what he thought was a dead critter. Instead, when an officer opened his car door, the animal got up in a crouched position like a football player. The creature hobbled to the guardrail and lifted its leg over the fence, keeping an eye on Matthews the whole time. More of that. Like, oh, even more of that. Are you familiar with the Grass Man?
The Grass Man, no.
The Grass Man, also known as the Ohio Grass Man, Kenmore Grass Man, or Orange Eyes, is a tall bipedal hominid that stalks the woods of Ohio. Its name, Ohio Grass Man. It is reportedly very similar to Bigfoot. It seems to be more aggressive than any other Sasquatch species. Grassman gets its name from the small hut-like living structures or nests it builds out of tall grass. The first prominent sighting of the Grassman occurred in the small village of Minerva, Ohio, in August of 1978. The grandchildren of Minerva residents Evelyn and Hal Clayton, along with their friends, ran side-screen by a hairy monster he saw in a gravel pit outside. When a couple went out to investigate, they saw what the crying children had described. It was covered in dark, matted hair, sitting in the pit and filling with discarded trash. It was estimated to be around 300 pounds. Clayton's fled, but this would not be the last encounter with the Isles Ape Man. The Claytons would see the Grassman many times after their initial encounters. One night, it was seen peering at them through the kitchen window. Hal ran for his gun, but the primate was gone before he returned. The area was later investigated by police, and although there was no sign of the hairy humanoid, several faint footprints were observed in the mud, and a terrible smell lingered in the air. The Ohio Grassman was later seen by the Claytons atop a hill near the strip mines at night. The next month, in broad daylight, the couple observed two hairy bipeds on the same hill. It was only after these reports by the Claytons were made that a startling connection was made. Days before the gravel pit incident, the Clayton's German Shepherd was found dead, his neck broken, presumably killed by the hairy beast. The Minerva case, along with its infamous Sasquatch, would form the most complex and important Bigfoot investigation in Ohio's history. Even so, the year 1978 was not the first mention of such creatures roaming the Buckeye State. In the 1700s, Indians natives to Ohio grasslands spoke of a race of bipedal ape men, referred to as the Wild Ones of the Woods, that lived nearby. The Native Americans would leave out food for the creature in an effort to keep peace. Again, in the late 1800s, signs of similar hairy biped were made by the Ohio River. The hominid had apparently tried to throw a man out of his carriage, but treated it with his daughter, riding as a passenger, threw several stones at it. It is unknown whether these are all grassman signs or possibly signs of a similar kind of Bigfoot. And if the latter, how relate?
We all know real life can suck sometimes, and your boss accidentally seeing you in your underpants on Zoom last week doesn't help any.
That's why reluctantly codependent sisters, the Shira and Rishalia, keep you enthralled and in stitches every week with their podcast, Legendary Africa.
Every Monday and Friday, we take you on a journey of mythical lands, magical objects, and monstrous creatures, both ancient and modern.
Find Legendary Africa on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you feed your ears. And remember, stay safe,
stay sexy,
and stay legendary.
To two or more species are. That's crazy. I don't know, but the kitchen, him peering through the kitchen part creeps me out a lot.
Yeah, to have something staring at you from outside your window definitely would be an unnerving sense.
What are these experiences your dad as a child had?
Well, I really hope he tunes in to listen because he'll appreciate me telling some of his. One notable experience was at a house they lived in rural Indiana.
Behind the property so many years before, and the pilot had been decapitated in the crash. Although he hadn't gone to rest, the ghost of a headless pilot running from flaming wreckage was something that got, and when my dad and they would see smoke curling from the, you know, the Indiana woods, they would always come up empty-handed, unless it happened to be at night when you could catch the glimpse of a headless gentleman running between the trees.
Wow.
Yes. Another instance that he experienced, I should say, was on Crybaby Bridge in Indiana, when he would go on to cross the bridge and you could indeed hear not only a baby crying, but a young woman wailing as well.
It's a big thing, bridges and women lost children. I've realized doing this research.
Yes. Have you come across Woman Hollering Creek outside of San Antonio, Texas?
Not yet. Say more about it.
That one is supposed. Yeah, that one is not far. We cross it anytime that we travel west from our home to go back and visit family. Woman Hollering Creek is apparently the basis of La Llorona.
Oh, yes.
The woman who supposedly drowned her children and then immediately regretted it. Bill that says Woman Hollering Creek when you pass over it.
Lady in white. Yeah. I think I'm gonna get to Mexico. I'm gonna have to do a thing about La Llorona.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Charles Mill Lake Monster. In 1959, three young women from Ohio claim to have had a face-to-face encounter with one of the most bizarre creatures ever to emerge from a seaweed-strewn lake bed. An encounter so brief and perplexing that even the most cryptozoologists don't know what to make of it, much like its highland counterparts on the flip side of the Atlantic. Ohio proves to be one of the most revered stomping grounds in the U.S. for more than a few unique species of aquatic-based cryptids. Far and away, the most notorious of these beasts are the small, bipedal, frog-like beads known as the Loveland Frogmen. But the Charles Mills Lake Reservoir, located about 100 miles away from Loveland in Mansfield, Ohio, is said to boast its very own aquatic oddity. Nestled in between Cleveland and Columbus, the Mills Lake Reservoir was constructed in 1935 by damming the Black Fork of the Mohican River, known for its voluminous catfish population. The lake is also said to be home of the unique and sustainable amphibious creature likes of which has only been seen once in a while, unlike any other cryptid ever reported. This odd and harrowing encounter occurred on March 28, 1959, when three teenage buddies, Denny Patterson, Wayne Armstrong, and Michael Lane, claimed to have had a run-in with one of the flat-out weirdest varmints that anyone has ever chronicled, at least in Ohio. The youth men testified that they were covering near Ruggles Road, near the swampy shores of the Charles Mill Reservoir at night, when they saw a strange 7-foot-tall being rise up from the black water in front of them. The petrified boys watched in horror as the colossal creature towered above them. Later, they described the beast as being a huge, armless humanoid with luminous green eyes and large webbed feet. Needless to say, the team wasted no time in exiting the scene and were swift to report their unusual encounter. The description of a humanoid creature rising from a murky lake is a very much like eyewitness accounts of the vicious Thetis Lake Monster, which hailed from Canada in August of 1972. Unlike the quasi-reptilian visage of the Thetis Lake Monster, this creepy manifestation, which falls somewhere in the murky gray area between the creature from the Black Lagoon, Harris are a man and unknown, seemed quite unlike any other creature ever reported. In fact, this thing is so bizarre that it's more like an emblem of the Swamp Thing and a frightened early design for Sid and Marty Krofft's Sidmund the Sea Monster. than a genuine biological entity. When local authorities made their way back to the reservoir to see what the entire hubbub was all about, they discovered a series of tracks that resembled the footgear worn by skin divers along the shore. Despite this apparent confirmation that something large but beat was stalking around the edge of the lake, there are no subsequent reports of the armless beast with glowing eyes. Esteemed cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman even chronicled this bizarre aquatic humanoid case in his 1985 book, Curious Encounters, described the being thus. This quote from him. A green-eyed, 7-foot-tall, seemingly armless humanoid seen late in March 1959 by Michael Lang, Wayne Armstrong, and Dennis Patterson came out of the lake and left behind tracks that resembled the footgear worn by skin divers. Thing was seen again in 1963, described as a luminous and green-eyed. I examined the site of these encounters and testify to Charles Mills Lake swampy affinities, certainly a good home for a black lagoon beast. It bears noting that Charles Mills Lake is allegedly the swamping grounds for another terrifying beast, which also has said to have a pair of iridescent eyes. The creature in question is a large hairy humanoid, which was said to have been driven out of its sewer tunnel home near a Cleveland's Riverside Cemetery, whereupon it began stalking in a lover's lane surrounding Charles Mills Lake. The filthy beast, which in many ways, except pigmentation, resembled the legendary Murfreesboro mud monster, was notable for what eyewitnesses claim were its glowing orange eyes, hence its designation as Orange Eyes. It goes without saying that the legend of Charles Mills Lake monster and orange eyes has been intertwined somewhat over the years. Fact which is understandable, considering they are both huge, deadly humanoid beasts that bear self-illuminating eyes, intensively shared in the same habitat. Nevertheless, distinctions between the creatures are clear. The Mills Lake monster is a armless, hairless, ostensibly amphibious, green-eyed monster with big webbed feet, while Orange Eyes is more akin to the prototypical Bigfoot in that in a large, hairy, ape-like creature with two arms and orange eyes. Many have rightfully pointed out that its so-called glowing eyes seen on these creatures may well be mere reflections caused by flashlights or headlight beams. These reflections can change color depending on the angle and source light. In the fascinating case of the as-yet unclassified creature known as the Dover Demon, observer who described a tiny, hairless, melon-headed creature claimed that its eyes were also were luminescent and shining multiple colors depending on where under what lightning conditions it was seen. There have been no confirmed reports of Charles Mills Lake Monster since 1959, although many, including Coleman, credit with that as apparent ape-like orange eyes encounter from 1963. However, every now and again, folks from the region still claim to discover strange tracks that resemble huge webbed feet near the boggy coast of the reservoir. Wow.
And the fact that they can still find stuff today is quite interesting.
I want to ask, how's it like, what's the feeling you get when you're sure the home you were in at the House of Madden was based on? Mm-hmm. Was it haunted, you would say?
That house definitely had memories of its own. Whether it was haunted by a quote, you know, ghost, I don't know. The house just seemed to have its own personality.
It's weird about places. Like, places have like a memory to them.
Yes. Definitely. One ghostly incident that scared me, like the Hotel Tremont incident, that didn't scare me. I was grateful that something came in and cleaned up so that I didn't have to. I wasn't scared. However, we lived in Vicenza, Italy, in a little villa on the side of a mountain in a tiny little town called Arcugnano. Between my ex-husband and myself, we had one car. As a military family in Italy, that's not uncommon. And he was on 24-hour duty at his base.
which was about a 30, 45 minute drive away. He had the car. First of the three doors start to open. There were three doors in this little villa. The outside was a wrought iron door. The inside was a glass storm door. And the innermost door was a very thick old wooden door that scraped across the flagstone tile of the floor. Well, I heard the key in the metal start to clink and click. And I walked outside, you know, of my bedroom. And I thought, is my husband coming home in the middle of the night? And I stood there in the dark and listened. That door creaked open. The key in the glass door turned and turned. That door opened. And then the big wooden door slid across the flagstone floor. And boots came clunking in across that floor. And I yelled out his name and said, hey, wish you'd called, you know, kind of creeping me out. And the footsteps stopped. Nothing happened. I hit the light and turned it on, and there was nothing there, and the doors were still closed and locked, despite my having heard them open. Needless to say, I grabbed up my little Italian cell phone and called him at his work phone number, and he answered the phone that he was assigned to answer, you know, all night long. I believe they call it staff duty when he was manning the phones. And I had quite the scare.
That's very terrifying.
Yes, that was a scary time. That was a time that still gives me chills to remember. Because not only, you know, was it scary to think that something came into your house, but there was nowhere to get away. I had two young children with me asleep and my two little babies, you know, and so we couldn't just go running down a mountain in the middle of the night in a country where we didn't speak the language very well with no help, no transportation, no nothing.
A lot of history in Italy.
Yes. Yes.
Especially in the early 20th century. A lot of stuff, bad things happened.
Yes, it's quite beautiful, but so historic.
Do you ever stop by, like, what's your favorite part of Italy?
Well, we only were able to be in northern Italy. We didn't get the opportunity to go down into southern Italy, to Rome, or anything like that. But, of course, being a writer, I absolutely loved Fair Verona. It was raining and overcast and dark and dreary when we got to go and visit, you know, Juliet's house and take the tours that we needed to take to see all the Shakespearean history. But it was just very humbling to be there.
Was it like being somewhere where you were familiar with the primary language?
Yeah, we tried to become versed in Italian, at least at a conversational level. Yeah. My two babies did wonderful. They picked up the language like little sponges. Me, on the other hand, I write better than I talk. And that is in any language. However, we did adopt two puppies, and I still have them to this day. They're little Italian greyhound and border collie mixes.
Oh.
Romeo and Rosie Juliet.
Oh, which one's... Between two dogs, which one's the more rascal? More of a rascal?
That would be Romeo, definitely. He's like a toddler. He's 13 years old now, and we adopted him from the Canile, or the Italian pound, in Vicenza. They were very hesitant to adopt to an American military. People who aren't true animal lovers may adopt a dog, and then instead of taking the necessary steps to take the dog with you to your next duty station, you know, whether it's in another part of Europe or back in the United States or wherever, a lot of people will dump the dogs.
Oh.
Yeah, but we, of course, are not those people. And Romeo is still a toddler at 13 years old. Goofy, he likes to dance on his hind legs, while Rosie is more of a little human. It's like, go and conquer the world. Give her an opposable thumb and she can. Very smart. Very smart dog.
Romeo sounds like my dog, Apollo.
Yeah. Is he goofy?
He's a giant puppy.
Yep. What kind of dog is he?
He's a pit bull.
Oh, goodness.
What he can be.
Oh, and all personality, I bet.
Yeah. He loves cookies.
Kind of amazing to think how loves cookies?
Yeah.
Oh. I think one of my favorite facts about pit bulls is how in the 19th century they were used as nannies. Mm. for the children of wealthy families. So they were nanny dogs. And I can definitely see that in the pitties that I've had over the years.
Very sweet dogs.
Yes. Love their humans and their cookies. Yes.
There's something called the Crosswick Monster. Crosswick, Ohio, a small unincorporated community in Warren County, isn't really known as for much. The unofficial border sits right alongside Waynesville. Its current population isn't recorded, and only one road passes through it. But for everything the small community doesn't have, it makes up for one thing: its recorded monster attack. Established in 1821 by James Jennings, the monster wouldn't make itself officially known to the residents of Crosswick until May of 1882. While many large unknown tracks had occasionally been found throughout the area, most often crossing over a dirt road that ran through the community, nobody ever thought to find it out what was making them. Most reports chalk this up to fear held by the residents and the belief that this is, if they didn't bother whatever creature was leaving them, it wouldn't bother them. But that way of thinking, as the residents would soon find out, was all about to change. While out fishing in Southern Waits Run, a stream that passes through Crosswick, two boys by the name of Ed and Joe Lynch, ages 13 and 11, began hearing loud, unknown sounds emanating from the tall grass behind them. Curious as to what the cause could be, the boys began to approach the area. Before they could investigate, though, a gigantic lizard burst through the brush and ran towards them on his four thick legs. Terrified, the boys began to scream and ran back towards their home. The creature, though proving too much for the pair, caught Ed in its mouth and pulled him down to the ground. Joe began to scream louder as he watched a terrifying reptile drag his brother along the stream edge towards a large held sycamore tree, which is apparently used as a den. Eventually, the screams of the boys were heard by three men in the area came rushing to their aid. The men, Reverend Jacob Horn, George Peterson, and Alan Jordan, arrived at the scene to find their near-dead boy still in the creature's mouth and almost completely pulled into the tree. Upon seeing this, the men race over the tree and retrieve Ed. After being dropped by the creature, before it climbed farther up its hollowed home out and out of reach. After summoning the nearest doctor in Waynesville to look after the boy, a man by the name of Dr. L.C. Lukens, three men rounded up a group of more than 60 residents to destroy the beast. Armed with axes, clubs, and well-trained hunting dogs, the groups marched towards the tree. Soon after arriving, the men started to chop at the tree with their axes in order to get the creature out. The dogs growling and barking at the creatures they knew was within the man anxiously waited for the beast to show itself. Thinking the creature was trying to escape from the large hole at the bottom of the tree, the group was taken by surprise when the reptile leapt towards the ground from a hole at the top. Upon hitting the ground, the creature stood upright on its hind legs, balanced itself from its tail, and awkwardly took away from the group. Some members of the group, obviously shocked and frightened by the appearance of the beast, dove out of the way and allowed the creature to make its escape. Others, not quick to be scared, chased after the monster without a second thought. The group chased the beast for nearly a mile over fences, through streams, up hills, and around trees. Eventually, though, the creature managed to escape its pursuers by charging headfirst into a hole surrounded by large rocks on the hillside. Members of the group, along with their dogs, surrounded the entrance to the hole and waited for the creature to once again emerge. Believing this was the only way in and out of the hole, the men kept watch. But it appeared as if there were another unknown exit from the hole. The creature never emerged and was never seen in the area again. The Crosswick monster was described as being roughly 12 feet long and covered with scales. It was black and white in color with dull yellow spots. It had feet roughly 12 inches long, a wide head, and a long fourth tongue. Because of the description, many researchers believe that the Crosswick monster is more than likely an out-of-place monitor lizard. Possibly candidates include the Australian Brente, Asian water monitor, the New Guinea crocodile monitor, or the Komodo dragon. Although species found in Crosswick would be far larger than those on record, as the monitors above are only known to grow to about 8 to 10 feet, even though lengths are rare and inconsistent throughout the species. Big lizard, man.
Oh, goodness. And it said it took him and then pulled him up the tree. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, like it took the boy and it dragged him to a hollowed out sycamore tree.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Is that near the same place as the Peninsula Python?
It might be.
I wonder if those two could be related.
Maybe.
I worked for the Park Service during my younger days in my pre-kid days, and the resident mountain lion population across a state park in New Mexico. And when you mentioned that about the young man being attacked and dragged up a tree, it reminded me of how mountain lions store their prey. And to have someone pulled up a tree definitely reminded me of wild animal. So that's why I wondered about your resident python as well, your legendary Peninsula Python.
Speaking of the Peninsula Python, it's a giant snake of northeastern Ohio. Length is about 15, 19 feet, dark with brown spot blotches, climb trees, rears up like a cobra, raids hen houses, tracks width of an automobile tire. Clarence Mitchell saw an 18-foot snake crawling across his cornfield near Plains, Iowa, on June 8, 1944. After several days of effort, a posse had been formed on June 25th, failed to find any evidence other than broken branches and trails leading to the Cuyahoga River. Reports of a large snake were made through August 1st, but other residents of the valley, including Pauline Hopko, who said it slithered away from a willow tree in her yard, frightened her cow so much that it broke loose and ran away.
Oh my.
Thinking it's probably a snake that, an escape snake from a carnival truck that supposedly crashed an area around 1934. Makes sense. How do you feel about snakes?
I love snakes.
I love snakes.
Yes, during the time that I worked at the Park Service, helping track the mountain lion population, it was also my job to capture and relocate rattlesnakes that had gotten too close to humans for either one of their safety, the human or the snake. And those snakes out in eastern New Mexico can get to be quite large. The blacktail rattlesnake, the diamondback rattlesnake, and 100% of them just want to be left alone. Yeah. And be warm, of course.
Do different rattlesnake species have different temperaments?
Yes. Yes. Our big shy, every single one I've encountered, and I've encountered many, they want to be left alone. If they're near you, it's and they need that warmth to keep them warm during, you know, during the night when they're out to hunt and what have you. And all of them have wanted to flee rather than fight. So the only time was by a copperhead, which, while it's not a rattlesnake, it is a venomous snake, and we were too close to its nest, and then it stared us down, and we left. Never a python, though. Never encountered a wild python.
I have a pet python.
Do you really?
Yeah.
How big is he?
Oh, she's getting pretty big, about 4 feet, 3 feet.
Awesome.
She's up there. She might need a boyfriend or something.
Can you imagine if she would be, you know, 20 feet long, like the peninsula python? Is she
too big? I don't know where to put her.
She'd be a little intimidating then.
Yeah.
Do you think it'd be intimidating enough to make a cow run away? Like in
I think so. Cows are pretty skittish.
Yeah.
Oh, some at night, you're like...
Special appears out of nowhere.
I don't know if you've ever been cow tipping or something.
I've never been cow tipping.
There's always a lake monster in Ohio. There's the lake Bessie.
Really, kind of like Nessie, but only Bessie.
Yeah. Very clever.
Yeah. What is her story?
Lake Erie is a solace of the five Great Lakes. It contains one of the least known lake monsters in the world. Unless you grew up on the shores of Lake Erie, like I did, I doubt you heard much of anything about Bessie. She is said to be a snake-like creature, 30 to 40 feet in length, approximately a foot in diameter, and gray-blue in color. Bessie is most often seen in the Western Basin, was first witnessed in 1817. There are many skeptics around the believer that Bessie is large lake sturgeon, for a common place in Lake Erie. A sturgeon can reach sizes of 20 feet in length and over 300 pounds. Big fish.
Wow.
That's a really big fish. Wow.
Right?
What's it going to cost? Be like, I don't know, like a 1 pound tilapia is like, $5.
It makes you wonder, what kind of line would you need to cast out to reel in something that big?
Like a giant rope and a giant hook.
Right. Have you seen the fishing show Chasing Monsters?
No, I haven't watched much of TV lately. I haven't watched TV in like forever, like cable TV.
I want to say that this is on Netflix, and he goes out to catch the biggest of the big creatures, sometimes even legendary creatures all around the world.
And this might be one that he would need to feature on his show if he could come and try to track down Bessie, our American version of Nessie.
For sure.
Did you say you grew up on Lake Erie shores?
Oh, no. I grew up in most of my life in Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Many believers refute this, saying that what they saw was much larger than a sturgeon and looked like a sea serpent. There have been any signs of Bessie over the last few decades, with some more sinister attacks occurring in the 1990s. Listing some of the signs of Bessie. In 1960, Ken Golick was fishing off a pier in Sandusky when he heard two rats. He decided to throw a couple of rocks at them when he saw the creature. He said it was a cigar-shaped and came out of the water about 1 to 1.5 feet. It was about 11 p.m. on a clear, calm night. In 1969, Jim Sliner stated the serpent came within 6 feet of him near South Bass Island. Although he did not see the length, the width was about 2 feet. The animal appeared to be about 1 foot under the water. In 1981, Teresa Kovac of Akron saw a snake-like reptile that was so large that it could easily capsize a boat. It seemed to be playing. She watched it from a house on a Cedar Point causeway. In approximately 1983, Mary M. Landall told John Schneifer about her encounter with Bessie off Rye Beach in Huron. Mary went out to her front porch just before dawn when the lake was quite placid. From the left end, she heard a roaring sound and saw what looked like a capsized boat. It was a greenish brown color, about 40 to 50 feet in length. Landell realized that it wasn't a boat, but an animal of some sort. It had a long neck, an eye was invisible on the side of its head with a grin growing up one side. The creature appeared to be playing in the water, but still put a scare into the witness. In the summer of 1985, Tony Schill of Avon, Ohio, was boating with friends north of Vermilion. When they reported the serpent, it was dark brown and had a flat tail. Tony stated that five humps came out of the water. No way it was a sturgeon. Dale Monroe of Lorraine was also boating. We came face to face with it. He stated that it had three humps and was black. He also reported that it was twice the size of a 16-foot boat. Location was seen was a calm waters just off the Lorraine Coast Guard Station. And his sighting lasted 3 to 4 minutes.
Wow.
In May of June or May or June of 1989, Gail Gassner obtains a graph from a boat owned by Ken Smith of Streetsboro. The fish finder appears to show a sonar reading of a cigar-shaped apparition about 35 feet in length and a depth of about 30 feet. On July 8, 1990, Susan Season of Salem witnessed the creature 2 miles from Cedar Point. Her description basically matched other reports. On September 3, 1990, Bob Sirocco, was jet skiing off Port Clinton when he thought he spotted a porpoise. Porpoise in fresh water? Oh, well. Bob had just moved from Florida. He told reporters that he saw humps with gray spots. It was very long as I moved closer and it was going down. September 4th, 1990, Harold Bricker and his family were fishing north of Cedar Point Amusement Park when a serpent-type monster swam by their boat about 1,000 feet away. Their description was a 35 feet long with a snake-like head. It moved as fast as their boat. Later, the Brickets reported their sighting to the ODNR Rangers at East Harbor State Park. On September 11th, 1990, fire inspectors Jim Johnson and Steve Dirks of Huron saw the creature from a third-story window facing Lake Erie. Describe it as a dark blue or black, about 30 to 45 feet long. He further stated that he saw three parts of the creature above water. It lay there motionless for the next 3 to 6 minutes and was flat on top. The week of September 16th, 1981, Dennis Sinzinski of Toledo saw Bessie near Toledo's water intake structure 3 miles offshore in Maumee Bay. He was fishing in the bay when something long and black stood there in front of him. Of course, man.
Wow.
That's a lot. Maybe it's just, maybe it's the same, the Peninsula Python.
Hey, you never know. It definitely could be. There's no telling what our waters hide.
Definitely. Fishing. Did you join fishing?
I'm no good at it. One of my children actually is a certified Texas angler with a little license and everything. So he's very good. But me, not so much.
What was this? I remember fishing as a little kid. I was getting a hook caught in a tree. Was casting.
Yeah.
That's me.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Me too. And then if you catch a hook, probably hurts, and then I just feel guilty. Too guilty to enjoy it. Yeah. I have a silly question.
What?
Is it an Ohio monster that is the supposed Mothman?
I've heard about this. Yeah, there have been some reported sightings in Ohio of the Mothman, but I think he comes from like West Virginia, Point Pleasant, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay, I remember going to see that movie and it was disturbing.
I didn't watch it. I had a VCR of it. I need to watch it again. Did you ever read the book?
Yeah.
How was it? I never read it. How was the book?
Which one?
The Mothman Prophecies.
The Mothman Prophecies? I have not read that book. I have not. I was a bad author, and I went and saw the movie, but I didn't read the book first. But the movie was chilling.
Very scary.
Yes.
Especially the part with the candy on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I have a 13-year-old son who's very, very interested in monsters and legends. His most notable interest right now is something called the Goatman.
Goatman.
Are you familiar with that one at all?
Yes, it's a humanoid goat thing. Like, think of like a cedar or like a from like Greek mythology. But he's a here's an axe, kind of murder, likes to murder people. Very,
yeah.
Very very gruesome myths, legends about him. He's like people on his bridge.
Yes. So he's also known as like the Pope Lick Monster. Is that right?
Yeah.
In Tennessee?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. That's what captivates my oldest son right now, the Goat Man. And he wants to know why the Goat Man would be so murderously angry, if it's because of what happened to him or just because he's neither fully goat nor fully man.
I don't know. I don't know why. I never spoke to a goat man, but I assume it's the like the old Billy Goat on the Bridge type of story.
Yeah, just a bad attitude, huh?
Yeah, bad guy.
Yeah, I had never put two and two together with, you know, a part goat on this railroad bridge with the three billy goats scratch. And there are bridge issues.
Yeah, there's been some people getting hurt because they were trying to get on that bridge and finally Billy the goat man and get hit by cars and trains and stuff. And no bueno.
Yeah, that's no good. That's no good. If you're going to go monster hunting and legend hunting,
be careful.
You want to be sure to come out alive.
Sure. Nice and safe. Tell everyone about it. Speaking of the goat man, I remember the story of how like kidnapped, either took someone, a kid, and like
yes,
chopped his head
lived
off.
Lived to hunt another day. Ooh. Oh no.
Yeah. Like I think they found him in a tree or something. The boy.
Oh no.
Yeah. I think this was in somewhere
more north. Bodies in trees.
Yeah. Well, speaking of trees, did you watch some that one Netflix movie that came out recently, the riot about that tree creature in Switzerland? What's it called?
No.
Yeah. Ritual. It's creepy.
And what was the name of it?
The Ritual.
You know what? I think my husband does have that on our list to watch. It does look creepy. But I'm a big fat wimp and I'm too scared to watch some of this stuff. I'll ride it, but then I can sleep with the lights on. But I'm still pretty wimpy when it comes down to it.
Me too, honestly. I'm very, very skittish.
Yeah, I'm definitely skittish.
I have a scary movies and have a blanket too much in. I don't know about you, but yep. Like I have a bed.
Because
like,
you know the monsters.
Yeah.
Sure. The blanket, right? Uh-huh.
I have a bed. It's like a raised up.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah. I have a bed. And it's raised above the ground, you know, and I'm sitting on the bed and like,
just
and I still get freaked. I don't know why, but I'm close to 30 now. And I still get freaked out if I'm like, my feet are dangling over the bed. Like someone's going to grab me, grab my feet from under the bed.
Where those monsters are just, they can just get under there.
Probably from that movie with the clown under the bed. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't do clowns. Those are my kryptonite.
Clowns are creepy. I don't like clowns.
Yeah, they scare me. I went to see the new It with my husband and my daughter because I love them and that's the only reason. I was scared the
whole time.
I was I'm looking at your it's called your books, man. You write a lot of books. You're growing a lot.
I do. Adult ADHD, I guess.
Yeah. What's been your favorite book to write?
Love to tell stories. You know, I have that question a lot. And usually my favorite book to write is the one that I'm working on now. It's always the one that's forthcoming. Whether that was book two in my Everlasting Heart series back, you know, in 2012, or now where I'm working on a Dracula book. It's always the one that I'm working on. The forthcoming work is always my favorite. And I actually just had a release today. Awesome. It's a book, I haven't got the chance to put it on my website yet, but it is called As It Pleases the King. And it's set during the waning days of Henry VIII in Tudor England. One of my favorite times in history. Talk about bloody.
Bloody, yeah. Very, very, very backstabby.
Yes. Yeah, those people lived a life that we can only imagine what it was like day to day. Do you have a favorite time in history?
Probably around there, Tudor time or Victorian England.
Awesome. You might enjoy that book.
Well, you ever seen The Tudors?
I love it.
Love it too. It's good.
I love it. I tried to get into Rain after that just to try to cure the Tudor thirst. You know, it left you wanting more. Because Henry VIII's legacy certainly didn't end with his death. You know, his daughters took it over. But I tried to get into Rain, and it seemed promising at first, but I couldn't follow it like I could Tudors.
Same.
Did you like Rain back? Did you get a chance to see it?
I never got a chance to see it.
Yeah.
I never got into it like Tudors.
Yeah, that was me as well. It felt more like a high school movie with high school characters and the drama than the Henry VIII worldly, you know, all the issues that he dealt with, that kind of drama.
If I remember correct, was Henry VIII the father of Queen Victoria? Queen Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yes.
Ooh. Queen Elizabeth I and Bloody Mary Tudor.
Ooh, Bloody Mary.
Yep. Whenever I go speak at various schools, middle schools, junior highs, elementaries, and if we get into the history portion of my books, I'll ask, okay, who's heard of Blake? And they raise their hands. Yeah, she lives in, she doesn't have a dad. That's when we get in the modern fear that goes with that and why she was called Bloody Mary. And I love to make that into a mini lesson. I guess that's just the inner teacher coming out.
I want to go to, did she like get locked up in a tower or something? I remember.
Bloody Mary?
Yeah.
Well, she took the throne after the whole Lady Jane Grey drama and decided to bring Tudor England back to the true faith, the true Catholic faith. And of course, doesn't believe like her. So she's burning all of these Protestants, and that's how she actually came to have her name. And she wound up dying of uterine cancer, I believe was the common diagnosis. Many false pregnancies, which could have been symptomatic all along. Then we come into the golden age with her sister when her sister takes over.
Shakespearean times.
Yes, I would like to go to England and see all of these places that have all of the people that I admire, read about, study, fear, and actually walk where they walked. That would be so humbling.
It would be. I love to go to like theaters and see his artwork, and very cool. Very,
yeah.
Like I said, very humbling.
Yes. Apparently, Henry VIII's, the girl that started it all, you know, Anne Boleyn, apparently her ghost still wanders around the castle grounds there where she was imprisoned in the Tower of London and then subsequently executed.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Anne Boleyn.
That would be what I would... That would be neat to see. Apparently, people, to see her ghost is no big deal because it's so commonplace. So to go see that would be, I guess for lack of a better word, cool. Be cool.
I'd love to, like, I wonder if you can talk, if the ghost could talk. I'd like to talk to her.
Right, that would be interesting. And I'd also like to know if she has her head while she's out walking around. Unlike the ghost on my dad's land so long ago, the one who'd been decapitated in the plane crash, he didn't have a head. His ghost was seen headless. I'd like to know if Anne Boleyn, since she was, you know, pushed from this life into the afterlife with no head, if she has one in spirit form.
I'd like to think she would.
Be worth a flight over the pond, see? Right? I'd like to see that too. That would be, it'd be worth the trip, that's for sure.
And Henry VIII was a big boy.
Yeah, apparently in his older days, I want to say that in all of the medical drama that's gone on, you know, since his death, everybody wants to see what all that man had going on. Apparently in his younger days, he was quite gorgeous, fit, yeah, handsome, over 6 feet tall, and then all of the years of gluttony took their toll. And what probably sounds to me like type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
Definitely took over.
We'll be at this for almost 2 hours. About, I don't
know. Oh, no. It looks like I am receiving a phone call right now. Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem. We've been at this for a good while, I'd say. What's it like when you start a book? Like, what inspires you?
A lot of history inspires me, as well as whatever's going on in life at the time. For instance, when I wrote my children's picture books, that was about the time I was reading many picture books to my own babies. Oh, goodness. Can I put you on hold 1 second?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'll be right back.
No problem. But wait, anything coming up today or up soon? Any events or anything?
Any events? I will be a panelist here in July with another Amish author and Macmillan Publishers through Katie Budget Books, our local independent bookstore. I'm very excited about that. That will be a virtual event as well. So I think that before our world gets back to the normal that we knew, we're going to have to go through some more changes first in finding what a new normal really is.
Very true. I seen like this morning World War III was trending on Twitter. I was like, oh no. How's it been?
Great.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, we don't need that drama.
I was growling at something. What's it like being on a panel?
It's a lot of fun, actually, to take the different questions with another person who knows a lot about what you know a lot about. Which it would be Amish culture and writing about that, and interweaving romance with that. I have two Amish romance series is going on right now with two different publishers. And yesterday I was fortunate enough to be able to pick out some cover art for the second book in a series that I have coming from Vinspire Publishing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Wow. It's getting to be lunchtime.
Yeah.
Here too, as well.
Well, I am kind of hungry. I mean, 1 o'clock. I'm sorry. Yeah, I've been at this for a bit. A hot minute.
Yes.
Where can people find you?
People can find me at saraharrisbooks.com.
Nice.
And that's saraharrisbooks.com. I'm active on Twitter, mostly on Instagram, and I have Facebook presence as well.
Nice.
Plus a bunch of Pinterest boards.
I will copy and paste your contact your social media stuff to this episode description.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
Who designed your website? It's really done. It's really done really well.
Thank you so much. I designed my website, and my husband is a master plumber who owns his own plumbing business, and I did his as well.
I might need his services because sometimes my kitchen sink leaks.
I tell you, we would look for any excuse to come beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm sure you're hungry for lunch as I am. You got all your munchkins to feed as well.
Yes. Well, everyone's gone on their summer vacations. So we have a relatively quiet house, as quiet as a house with four silly dogs can be.
Yes.
Well, Tanner, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being a guest.
I appreciate it. Yes, sir. Maybe we'll see you again.
Hopefully.
Yes, sir.
Good one.
You too. Okay, bye-bye.
Well, now that you know where you never should roam, sleep safely. But keep one eye open in case they still follow you home.
thank you for listening to this episode of Monster Legend Podcast. Or to find more information about Monster Legend Podcast, go to monsterlegendpodcast.com or anchor.fm/monsterlegendpodcast. There you can find all episodes and platforms on which the podcast is on, which you can subscribe to. You also can email me with questions that will be answered on the show. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.